It's just Moreno Rav Shlita, Chaim Aruchim to Warren Greenwood, on the upcoming first yacht site of his dear mother. We say this Shir Le'inu Nishmas, Mamas Gittel Bas Reb Ze'ev. Imagine you're at school and you're asked to do a project to write an introduction to the Aseret HaDibros, or to the Torah. What sort of introduction would you write? That is indeed what the Akdamos is. People call it a poem, but it's really something much more special than that. It's a shiro. It's something which sings praise, something which highlights most beautiful aspects of Yiddishkeit. I'm not going to do a class lesson by going through the text and translating the words. It is quite a hard, tedious type of Aramaic, but for your convenience, I've given a handout to give a general form of translation. This is, in fact, an abridged, edited translation. If you want a copy, I've still got a few more left here. It was written by Rav Meir ben Rabbi Yitzchok of Worms, Germany, who might not be very well known, but apparently Rashi quoted him a number of times in his Perush on Tanakh. Here we are. The most conspicuous aspect of the nature of the Akdamos is that every single line ends with a Sov Aleph, So, which might be typical of Aramaic, but it's deliberate, and the Farshim say it's because that Torah is infinite. When you come to the letter Tov at the end of the alphabet, you immediately start again with an Aleph, because Torah is never ending. And this idea of infinity is really brought out by a most beautiful idea in the first few lines, which I will read out the English of. Before I read the words, the Ten Commandments, well, they're really 613 commandments, but we all know what that means. Dibrosar, 10 words. I will ask permission of the one whose might is such that even if all the heavens were parchment, if all the forests were pens, quills made out from all the trees, and if all the seas were ink, and if all the people of the world were scribes, it would still not be enough to record the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. To give an idea of what infinity is never easy. To understand what that word means, it's perhaps best understood with mathematics. When you try to explain to somebody that you just keep adding numbers, the Olam Void forever and ever, you'll never get to the end. Or maybe in a physical form, if you fly out into space in a rocket, and you fly on and on and on for billions of light years, you won't come to a brick wall. It just goes on and on and on. But one scientist I spoke to about it thought that that's not the best example of explaining infinity, but we won't get too scientific now. But Hashem is infinite, and it's very hard with human understanding to grasp what infinity really is. Certainly with two railway lines which are parallel to each other, they never meet each other, they go on and on and on. But in the end, you're going to get to somewhere like John O'Groats, and then they'll stop, but infinity carries on forever. With our limited human understanding, life is like looking through a keyhole. We can't really grasp the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But with the Akdamos, the writer has given us an idea of what Hashem is. And that with the beginning of the Akdamos, he has made this praise, and then goes on to say how beloved is his people Israel, whom he has a special relationship with. We say Kadosh, 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 and we say the Shema twice a day, and praising him. And the peoples of the world are going to say to us, come with us, we will satisfy your desires. And Klal Yisrael responds with wisdom, and they say, what is your greatness? Israel say to the nations, compared to the reward that Hashem has in store for us, Jerusalem shall be rebuilt, and we will sit under the eventual Geula when Mashiach comes in a sukkah made from the skin of the Leviathan fish. We'll discuss more about that later, and we'll have a dance and have a big banquet from this great fish, the wild ox, the behemoth. And you, my listeners, when you hear your praise in this song, be strong in your faith and you will merit to sit in the company of the holy and righteous ones in the world to come. And at the beginning, at the end, which means infinity, hu hoya, hu hove, hu yeye, as we say in Adon Olam, Hashem desired and chose us, and he gave us the Torah.
Why
is it in Aramaic? A number of Mephoshim ask this question. One is because we don't want the angels to feel overly jealous that Hashem chose us, and the angels don't understand Aramaic, or some say they understand Aramaic but they're unable to respond to Aramaic. But there are some other opinions I've come across. There's an opinion that this was written as a form of vikuach against Christianity. But we did not readily want people of the world to understand what it was saying, and it's more perhaps to give ourselves a chizuk rather than to give them a defiant rebuke. And it's harder for the people of the world to start understand Aramaic than to understand Hebrew. There are various explanations. Now, there is an interesting story floating around about the Akdamus, but I haven't found an actual source for it. A number of Rabbonim who have given Shirim quoted the Eliyahu Rabbah, but I can't find it in the Eliyahu Rabbah, even though the Eliyahu Rabbah speaks about the fact that we say the Akdamus. And this story is about the Sambatyon River, the famous river which would not flow on Shabbos, but during the week it not only flowed but spat out fire and threw out stones, a very ferocious river somewhere in the area of Syria or Lebanon. And it once happened that on the other side of the Sambatyon River were living the direct descendants of Moshe Rabbeinu, whose lives were in danger because there was some heathen priest who was practicing sorcery and black magic, and just by a mere glance or a word he could kill people, and he started killing Jewish people. So the people there complained to the local king about this guy, and the king obviously realized he had to do something about it, but sitting on the fence he said, well, what are we going to do about this? And this sorcerer said, I want to have a debate, I want a theological debate with the Jews as to their religion. So the king granted the request, but he said 3 months are given till you find somebody to carry out this task. But they were worried whoever they bring along would just be killed instantly by this heathen priest. So it was decided to get somebody really holy and special who would be able to withstand this guy's sorcery. And this man, Rabbi Meir ben Rabbi Yitzchok of Worms, Germany, was chosen for this task. Problem was, he had to cross the Sambatyon River, and the only time you could cross it is on Shabbos, because during the week it was just so wild, and Shabbos it was calm, but you know, crossing the river on Shabbos with halachic ramifications. But it was realized it was something which is pikuach nefesh, to save Jewish people's lives, so there was no question about it. Question was how he got back afterwards, but with his power he managed to outwit this sorcerer. There's something about the sorcerer made rocks in the air, and something which Rabbi Meir ben Rabbi Yitzchok pronounced that made this fellow fly up in the air and knock his head against it, and it killed him. But I can't find a source for this story. Certainly if you Google the words Akdamus and Sambatyon, you'll find this story coming up in various places, but I can't find a source for it. Rav Chaim Kanievsky did ask the Chazon Ish about the Sambatyon River. Where is it? Is it a river? Is it a spring? Do we know where it is nowadays? It's a special river because it never flows on Shabbos. And the Chazon Ish said, we don't know where it is. If Hashem wants us to know, then we will know where it is. But it seems that for this moment in time, he doesn't want us to know. So that's by way of an introduction. Certainly the subject of infinity comes up very much at the beginning in describing the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and this is something which we have want to carry through. The practice which happened for at least 200 years was to read the Akdamus after the first Pasuk of the Leining. So on the first day of Shavuot, we learn from Parshas Yisro, Ravi, and there we sing, B'chodesh HaShlishi Yotzeis B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim B'yom HaZeh B'Midbar Sinai. And then the Balkari would stop, and then the Akdamus would be read, and then the Leining would carry on. And this practice carried on for a very long time. Why was it just done then? There is an opinion that this miracle which happened, that the Jews were saved, happened in a Midbar, and it's an allusion to this Nes which happened with Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yitzchok, and that they waited for the words Bamidbar, Bamidbar Sinai, and that's why, to allude to the miracle which happened as a background to this story, because that was the time when Rabbi Meir ben Rabbi Yitzchok wrote the Akdomus, and so that's why it was done. But why interrupt the laning? You know, do it before, do it after. Another opinion is that it was the practice for a Meturgeman, a translator, to translate every verse of laning, because people would not understand what was being said. So in order that it's understood in people's own language, there was an interruption then for the Meturgeman. So that was the dumb thing. And there is another opinion brought by Rav Yaakov Emden to say that the reason why this custom was established was because it was, although it was regarded interruption, it was given kavod la Torah. The idea is that although a minhag is something which should not override a din, and this was a minhag, and we have a din that you don't interrupt the laning, nevertheless, because he said it was kavod la Torah, a special dispensation as it were, we have discussed minhagim in the past, one has to call up a kohen for the first aliyah, but it became a minhag in some communities to sidestep the kohen and to call up somebody who bid the most money for the first aliyah. Why? Because that's kavod la Torah. And so the various poskim allows it to happen on Shabbos Bereishis. Not done nowadays though. But the idea is that a minag might be able to override a din, where that minag is a minag vosikin, it's a very old and established custom, and it's kavod la Torah. And there's a Shalos HaTshuvos called Shar Ephraim, who is in fact quoted by Daily or Abba, who goes into this whole custom in detail to decide whether one should really do away with a custom, and he gives great strength to it, but says preferably it should be read before the laning starts, and that is in fact the custom nowadays.
Still do the same with the
right, yeah. The nevertheless, on the second day Shavuos, there's another beautiful piyut called Yitziv Piskom, which is read after the first pasuk, and that seems to follow the pattern which was done with that Domus. We won't have time to discuss this with Piskon, but it's a very, very nice field. But there the custom remains. We do sing it after the first verse. So, interesting idea that anyone who's laning the second day of Torah, Shavuos, you've got Hashem, two of Hashem's names next to each other. People mistakenly read it as Hashem Elohim, but it's really Elohim Hashem. Alright, if you just look at the vowels, that will confirm it. As I said, I don't want to go through this text, but various questions come out from this text. If we look towards the end, and we're talking about the banquet in paradise, about this great fish and this wild ox, in section 8 of the Akdomus, and the wine preserved from creation, come on, we know that Olam Haba, paradise, is something spiritual. What's all this emphasis about food and drink? Are we going to say that we have a slap-up feed? You know, rice caterers are coming along in paradise to give us a slap-up meal. Is that the right way? In fact, the Rambam laughs at, in a very unusual way, because the Rambam in his Yod HaZokah and Mishnah Torah, he's giving us halachas, but in Hilchos Teshuvah and Perek Ches, he actually tells us that there are lots of misconceptions about Olam Haba. People think wrongly that it's all materialistic, and he laughs at the Arabs, he says, who believe it's all food and drink and other physical pleasures. People think they are eating and drinking wonderful foods, uboel, and they're involved in other physical pleasures, and they are wearing beautiful clothes of silk, and silver and gold. This is the view of Arabs who are foolish, who are despicable, and are steeped in immorality. Aber hachomim baleidei yodu shekad vroimah elu divrei hevel. People who know for sure what's going on, the olam haba is really something much more. He said it is people who are in a spiritual form within the shamas, and the righteous ones are close to the Shekhinah, are very much near to Hashem's presence, and the wicked are far away from the Shekhinah, and that is their punishment. That is, I mean,
but it's interesting they still believe that.
Yeah, well, and there were some goyim I knew who had perhaps a slightly correct notion. When I came to work in Ealing Council in the 1970s, people did not like the chief executive because they said he made himself out as though he was God. And they used to say about him that when he came up to the next world and Hashem would sit in the throne and say to him, "And who are you?" Well, he would first meet the guy who was in charge of housing and the guy who was in charge of finance, and the housing fellow would say, "Yes, well, I provided homes for poor people and I did lots of righteous deeds." So Hashem would say, "Okay, you sit on my right hand side." And then the finance director would say, "Yeah, well, I provided the money for all these poor people and I did lots of good deeds." So Hashem would say, "Okay, you sit on my left side." And then he'd look at this chief executive and he'd say, "Who are you?" And he said, "My name is Kumba and you're sitting in my seat." People also have a weird idea of what Gehinnom is. When they talk about burning in hell, all right, we talk about fire. And there was once a story I heard that some people think that people get a choice when they come to Gehinnom. They see lots of fire. One fellow comes along and he sees people standing up to their knees in cow dung. And he thinks, "All right, that's not such a bad punishment. Okay, I'll choose that one." And then he joins it. And then there's an announcement, "Okay, tea break's over, stand on your heads." So what does Olam HaBo really mean? It's certainly not the Gashmius. It's something spiritual. So why in the Akdomus is this whole emphasis on the food and the drink? But there are other questions which come out, not directly from the Akdomus wording, but from the whole concept of Kabbalah HaTorah. You know, we know that Klal Yisrael said, "Naseh v'nishma." We will do and we will listen. So with that zechus, we receive the Torah. So you say, how wonderful Jewish people are. Before we could even understand what was in the Torah, we said "Naseh." Nishma would come afterwards. But come on, surely logically, you should say Nishma v'Naseh. And indeed, if you would say Nishma v'Naseh, then when you take on the Torah, surely you got a greater merit because you understand what's in it, and then you accept it willingly. Surely that should be something even more special. So what is this big zechus about saying Naseh v'Nishma? The attitude you might have when you buy a house or you buy a car, you'll have a survey done on the house before you go and buy it. When you buy a car, you might have a test done on it, or you at least you'll do a test drive on it. You're not just going to buy it blindly. Otherwise, you might risk that you'll end up. So what is this idea that we go into something which appears to be blindly? In fact, the Gemara tells us in Shabbos, Kippur Aleihem HaKegiyus, in Shabbos Daf Pei Ches, Hashem went around the nations of the world offering them the Torah, and they rejected it. The Amalekites, the Ishmaelim, they said, "Oh, we can't keep this. It says you shall not murder, you shall not steal. We don't keep these things." So he came to Klal Yisrael, and then Hashem held a mountain over our heads and said, "Will you accept the Torah?" Now, if somebody holds a mountain over your head and says, "Look, if you don't agree with what I'm offering you, this is your burial place," now you're not exactly going to feel much sort of free will, are you? You'll just sort of say, "Yeah, okay, just take that mountain away, okay." So where is this free will concept? That's the next question which comes out of him here. If you say that we have Bechira, all right, the Mephoshim say that Naseh v'Nishma was actually said before the mountain was placed on our heads. And Tosfos in that Gemara say, well, it was like an insurance policy. We had already agreed Naseh v'Nishma, but Hashem was worried that we might back out. So, okay, so he held the mountain over our heads. The Maharal dismisses that. He says something quite amazing. The Maharal says there's something much deeper in this idea. And in Tiferes Yisrael, in chapter 32, he brings the pasuk from Parshas Ki Tsetse about the man who forces the woman. I haven't got the right page. But As a man, he has to pay a fine. He has to pay a fine of 50, and he has to marry her, provided she agrees. She might want him as a husband. Not sure whether she would when he's such a wretched rapist. But if he forces her, then he has to marry her, and he's never allowed to divorce her. Kol Yomov. So the Maharal says this is like Hashem with Klal Yisrael, that Hashem wants to be married to Klal Yisrael permanently. And he wants to give us a guarantee. He says, I will never divorce you. This is a permanent relationship. This is infinity, just like we've been talking about infinity by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem's relationship with Klal Yisrael is infinite. So in order that we create this infinite relationship, Hashem is alluding to that din in Kiseitzeh, saying, I'm forcing you. Here is the mountain over your heads. Most beautiful, amazing idea. But the Gemara says, although we might feel that we didn't have free will, later on, at the time of the story of Purim, we accepted the Torah on ourselves. And that's the main simcha of Purim, that we accepted it willingly. So even if you say that it was forced upon us at the time of Har Sinai, later on we accept it on ourselves. And there's a very interesting drosha of the Prashas Drochim, the Mishnah Lemelech, who says that if you look at all the punishments which we received before the story of Purim, those only related to the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nei Noach, or halachas which we were given before Matan Torah. But any halachas we were given with Matan Torah, we were never punished for until after the story of Purim, because of Kibbu v'Kiblu Hayahud. So those are very fundamental questions about why Nasa v'Nishma, why withdrawal of free will. So what is free will, just briefly? It's very complicated. We don't want to get bogged down in it. But you might say, look, I don't really have free will, because if I do good, okay, I get the reward. But if I do bad, I'll get a punishment. So what sort of freedom is that if I'm going to get a punishment? I don't really have a choice to do what's good. Rav Dessler looks at free will as an idea where a person has the freedom with their own human intellect to come to the logical conclusion that Hashem and Torah are MS. That is Bechira. Which isn't therefore exactly freedom between doing good and doing bad, because you will be punished for doing bad, but you've got the freedom to realize that Hashem is MS and Torah is MS. And I found another interesting idea in the writings of Rav Kook, who says that when it came to accepting the Torah, the Torah is not just a handbook, it's not just a manual and a guide for us for life. It expresses our very inner essence, so that when we violate it, we become estranged, not from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but we become estranged from ourselves, from our own true selves. And therefore it was important that when Hashem gave us the Torah, that there was an element of free will which is missing. Simply because if we don't keep the Torah, then we are being self-destructive in that spiritual way. So it's important for us to be coerced in that manner, even though, as we say, Hodo Kiblu Abimeach Shverosh. But let's come back to this idea of the physical, which is very much stressed in the Akdamos. And each, section 8, and each righteous one under his canopy will sit in the sukkah made from the skin of the Leoson. The Leoson is a giant fish. Alright, doesn't need shechita. The wild ox does, but there's some medrash about the Leviathan doing the shechita on the wild ox. And the tzaddikim will be partaking from this food, the fish of the Leviathan. And from the wine preserved from the Briyas Olam. Lots is written about Leviathan and Midrashim, but let's just keep to this question. Why are physical pleasures here being stressed? There's a sefer called Yad Aharon, which writes 20 pages on this subject, quoted in the English Art Scroll. But in the Art Scroll, he brings down just three answers, and we'll look at those, and then maybe one or two more. The Yad Aharon writes, he says, the Leviathan can't really be a physical thing because it's a food that Hashem is directly giving and setting aside for the Tzaddikim. So there's a spiritual elevation and identity on it which you don't get with, alright, all food is provided by Hashem and the mon was provided by Hashem, but this is a special spiritual food which is on the menu when one enters Gan Eden for the Tzaddikim. And so although we describe it in a physical way, it's a spiritual concept. That's the first answer he gives. But Derech Moshul, the Rambam writes in Hilchas Tshuva in Perek Ches that the whole concept of the Seuda of the Levioson is a parable or is an allegory. It's not really that they're sitting down to eat from this fish. Giant fish that it is, there'll be lots of tzaddikim, there should be enough to go around, but it seems, according to the Rambam, the Chachomim Koru Lo Derech Moshul L'Tov Azu HaMezumenes L'Tzaddikim Seuda. So whether it's actually literal or not, the Rambam leaves that open. That's one answer. Another idea is, it says the Yad Aharon, is that the Tzaddikim are going through a transition between the physical world and the spiritual world. So that when they are coming from Olam Hazeh to Olam Haba, in order to effect that transition, they are given the food of the Leviathan fish, which, like we said before, is a spiritual idea, but is bringing one from one aspect to the next. Then there's another idea, and that is the physical and the spiritual are so closely related. That is to say that you eat a piece of food, you make a bracha over it. The meat you eat requires shechita. You have to keep kashrus. You're separating the food, the meat and the milk. There's so much spiritual ideas relating to the physical. And with clothes, you don't wear shatnas. You make a shechionu. You're serving Hashem with everything material that you're doing. That is part of avodas Hashem. So we say in Kadosh and Tiyu, you shall be holy. What does holy mean? We think holy means sitting in a fast and abstaining from all physical pleasures, or paspa melach tochel, as we said in Pekei Avos, I think yesterday. Paspa melach tochel. You eat bread and water, of mine but mashura tishter, valaoetz tishon, and you lie on the ground to sleep, v'chai tzah tichya, and you live a life of trouble. Is that really necessary? Does that mean you shouldn't be living in a comfortable house in North Hendon or in London? What is the Mishnah trying to tell us? I remember when we were in Yeshiva in Israel, and in those days they only gave tomatoes and cold tea, and we were asking ourselves, you know, does the Mishnah really mean it that we have to go through this Chaye Tzar Tichya in order to keep the Tzar properly? So the conclusion we then came to was that we should be prepared to go through that sort of lifestyle in order to keep the Tzar. But it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to lie on the floor in order to sleep. So Kaddish Atzmacha B'Mashe Mutalach means that every single aspect of your physical life is done to serve Hashem. And so we have Yom Tov, and the Yom Tov we celebrate with meals, and alright, we say Chetzel Hashem, Chetzel Hashem, half you dedicate to HaKadosh Baruch and half is for yourself. But even if the half that you dedicate to yourself is part of your Avodas Hashem. So if you sleep on a Shabbos because it's a Tanuk, it's Oneg Shabbos. You're not sleeping in order to stay up the following night. Every single thing you do, you buy a car, you think it's a luxury, but you'll be able to do mitzvahs with that car. And when you have a nice house, you'll be able to have guests and entertain in that house. So every single aspect of your physical life is spiritual. So the Rashba stresses that in Baba Basra, Ayin Hey, this idea that through the physical food, we will always be functioning on a spiritual level. And this is the idea which is being stressed in the Akdamos. That you will be serving Hashem with physical food, and that's why he picks out that example of the reward given to the Tzaddikim La'osid Lava. There's another interesting idea which I picked up from Rav Desla in Chelek Hay of the Michtov Melio, page 202, and he brings down from the Gro that when the Tzaddikim eat from the Levioson, they will then realize all the sodos, all the secrets of the Torah. So although we've got logic when it comes to certain mitzvahs like Shabbos to commemorate creation and to be nice to other people, which is all very logical, but there are chukim, there are statutes which just can't fathom what the reason is. Meat with milk, shatnas, Torah adumot. So we don't understand these things at all. Once you have eaten from the fish of the Leviathan, that will have some magical effect on you, in that your eyes will open and you will understand all the secrets of the Torah without any questions. So the problem though with that is that once you know all the secrets of the Torah, you won't have any bechira left anymore. You won't have any free will, because free will always gives you some doubt in your mind about whether something is right or not. But at that stage, once you have been through Olam Hazeh, you don't need the bechira anymore. So that is when the tzaddikim eat from the Leviathan fish, and their bechira is annulled. We started off talking about the subject of infinity. Hashem is infinite. The Nefroas HaBore. Avraham Avinu got his whole emunah just by looking at the wonders of nature. He studied the trees, he saw the rain cycle, he saw how things grow, he saw animal life. Wherever he went, he saw intelligence. And when people see intelligence, then it's like seeing a label, I was here. Right? And you get the people who teach science, and they use this phrase, specially designed, or nature specially designed it this way, or nature specially designed it that way, without referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but they always talk about a certain intelligence. Once I was suffering from ear infections quite frequently, so the doctor sent me to the ear, nose and throat hospital, and there I met a Chinese English doctor who looked at me and he said, I have to warn you that before you're getting your ear infections, it's probably because you've been scratching your ears, you've been picking at them, and you've been withdrawing your earwax. So I said, so what? It irritates me. He said, no, you have to understand that your earwax is specially designed to kill the bacteria. I beg your pardon? He said, it's specially designed to kill the bacteria. And I was walking away from the hospital saying, specially designed, specially designed. And that's just one small aspect of my life, the earwax. You know, and so many things in nature we come across, and we're being told by the scientists, it's specially designed. And this is what comes out from the Ark Domus, that if all the heavens were parchment, if all the forests were pens, and if all the seas were ink, and if all the people of the world were scribes, you still could not describe the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who just had a soft utterance with a single letter, the letter Hey, Olam Nivra Behei, a simple letter which hardly even, it hasn't even got a consonant in it. Hashem pronounced the Hey, Vayir Vayvoka, Yom Hashishi, there's a big Hey, to show that Hashem created the world simply with a Hey. So there you got infinity. So what's that meant to teach us? For us, our lives feel temporary. Nebuch, we suffer losses, and there are two things which are definite in life, that you're going to have to pay tax and that you're going to die. And in order to try and feel this idea of permanence, people, they put up plaques in shuls that their deceased relatives are remembered, that people want to have this idea of continuity, that things are not forgotten, and that life in a way does carry on in some physical sense or resemblance. And that's the desire we have. And we are temporary, but there is a way how we can emulate Hashem, and we can even achieve infinity ourselves. Because the Torah is infinite, and Hashem is infinite. And if we adopt the Torah, then we become infinite as well. We can catch on to that idea of infinity by just keeping the mitzvahs of the Torah. And that's the idea we get now as we approach Shavuos. We are given this medicine of Kabbalah HaTorah to transform our lives from the temporary to the permanent. That's how we can personalize the idea. And when we make the bracha, we get called up to the Sefer Torah, Asher Bocha Boni Mikol HaAmim V'Nosam Lanu Es Torosa. Hashem chose us and He gave us the Torah, and He married us in a manner, as we showed from the Maharal, that He will never divorce us. So Asher Bocha Boni Mikol HaAmim. And after we've read from the Sefer Torah, we say Asher Nosam Lanu Taras MS, that we know it's the truth, the Chaye Olam Nosabas Ochenu, and He gave us this permanence. That infinity, which we remark about in the Ark Domus, we are being given that opportunity in joy, tachas ha-shalavat ha-seb b'simcha, to do it with joy, more than all the jewels in the world, as we said yesterday in Pekah Avos, the Margolios, the Kesef, the Zohov, we can attain that infinity, and that becomes the essence of our being. So the Yiddishkeit is not just a Sunday morning job of people who go to church, or a Sunday morning job of people who come to a bagel breakfast cheer, that it's every single day of the week, 24/7, every aspect of our lives that we're doing, even the way that we tie up our shoelaces, we are serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that we are constantly being able, therefore, to merit a life of infinity, le'olam v'oed. חג שמח. רבי חנן אומר, קשו אבא זה חדש ברוך, וזה חשבי חלם סמין, שמי אמר, נוח וייס למען תיתה, אביר צהר ויעדיר.